This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dashran Johan. The Malacca state elections is set to take place on the 20th of November. Now, this comes at the heels of four members of the Perikatan Nasional / Barisan Nasional coalition, when four members of that coalition decided to pull their support from the Chief Minister of Malacca, Dato Sri Sulaiman Mohamed Ali of UMNO, and this caused the government to collapse. So joining me on the show to discuss all things Malacca elections is a regular guest on the show, Dr. O. A. San. He's a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. Welcome to the show, A. San. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, busy as you could imagine.
Yes, our political scene right now is a total mess as it has been for the past 1 year. So let's talk about the Malacca elections. Let's start from the top, A. San. Perhaps you can give us a refresher or breakdown of the sequence of events that triggered the elections in the first place.
Well, I think something has been brewing in Malacca for the past few months. Mm. And that is because at the federal level, I think there are various factions within UMNO which are gearing up to face off each other, for example, in the party elections in the months to come and so on, because we have a prime minister who is at most the number three in the party, and of course he would like to be the number one. Mm. Whereas the present number one, the party president, Zahid Hamidi, of course, would like to defend his positions, right? So when there are all these simmering infightings at the top, you know, at the state level, sometimes there'll be people who take opportunities to try to advance their own political careers because they sense some sort of political vacuum, right? So I think that was what happened in Malacca, where I think a few weeks ago, there were four assembly persons who were supposed to be on the government side, on the state government side. Suddenly, they withdrew their support for the chief minister of the day, namely Mr. Sulaiman. Hmm. And among these four defecting assembly persons were, of course, the former chief minister of Malacca, and as well as two of his colleagues, and all three of them were actually exco members of Malacca. So I think at some point they withdrew their support, which caused the Malacca government to lose its majority support in the state assembly. And according to the Malacca constitution, just like any other state constitution in the country, you know, once you lose your majority, you could either resign as chief minister, or you could ask the governor of the state to dissolve the state assembly. Mm. And of course, I think the Malacca chief minister decided to do the latter, and the governor consented in dissolving the state assembly and thereby paving the way for the next Malacca state election. Yeah.
So this is almost a similar situation in terms of how the election got triggered. It's almost similar to the Sabah state elections. Now, before we get into the politicking side of things, Isan, perhaps we can talk about what is the impact going to be? You know, there's been debates over the past few weeks on whether the election should take place at all. Now, some experts say there should be darurat in Malacca to prevent elections, while others say we shouldn't keep using darurat or any other similar mechanisms, you know, as an easy way out, and that we should always let democracy take its course, that it's par for the process during good times or bad times. Where do you stand on this matter?
Well, unfortunately, it's not only democracy which would take its course, it's also the coronavirus which would take its course, yeah. Right? Undoubtedly, it puts us in a very, very difficult dilemma for those of us who are, shall we say, freedom and democracy loving crowd, right? We will, of course, like to see as many elections as possible. So that the voices of the people could be heard more frequently, right? Mm-hmm. But of course, we are at a very difficult times whereby the coronavirus, although somewhat subdued with a high level of vaccination and so on, but if you look at examples in many other countries, including, you know, advanced countries such as the United Kingdom, if you look at many other examples around the world, once they open up, you know, the virus would come back with their variants, all these lambdas and deltas and so on, you know, coming back with a vengeance. So the fear is, of course, if you let Malacca election go forward, even though the health minister had prohibited large gatherings and so on, it is almost inevitable people will still break those rules and gather in large physical crowds. And that's where the coronavirus would again take its course. So yeah, it's a difficult choice. But if it is up to me, I would say I would declare emergency and perhaps hold it at some point in the future, at least till the Sarawak emergency is it's over. Maybe you can hold it. Well, no, that's not a good idea. You hold it simultaneously, then the politicians crisscrossing East and West Malaysia. It's even worse, right? So yeah, I mean,
it's a tough situation.
Yeah, it's really tough and a dilemma situation, right?
Yeah.
So, but I sincerely don't think at this point it is advisable to do so. Yeah, perhaps you know, sometimes early next year. Yeah.
Yeah, and that it also is going to lead to other other issues. We talk about democracy and all these things, the voices of the people needing to be heard. But as we, if you look back at the Sabah state elections, the voter turnout was relatively poor, because if you look at, let's say, GE14, the overall voter turnout was around 80 plus 85% people, registered voters turned out. But when we look at Sabah elections last year, it was only about 60+% because, you know, the people were scared of the COVID situation, rightfully so. A lot of people didn't want to travel back to their hometowns in Sabah to vote. As we know, many people are working in the peninsula, particularly in states like Selangor and so on and so forth. So, you know, the Sabah state elections, relatively poor voter turnout. Things are maybe a little bit different now, Ehsan, because, you know, we have good vaccination rates. A lot of people are vaccinated. The adults, especially those who are eligible to vote, most of them have already been vaccinated. Do you think they will come out and vote?
Well, of course, in an election, you would like to see a lot of voters turn out, right? But in this election, the election commission said something like they will allow a high degree of postal ballot. So I would urge those who are in the neighboring countries who will be able to do their postal ballots to do so expeditiously. Those in Malacca, yes, please come out to vote, but really, please keep distance of a meter or so, right? And not crowd the polling stations. Again, a very dilemma situation.
Certainly. Uh-huh. Now, earlier you brought up what Health Minister Khairi Jamaluddin said, which is that no physical campaigning will be allowed for Malacca state elections from October 25th to November 27th. As you mentioned, this is kind of, you know, it's a good rule to have on the one end, but these things are inevitable. But you know, is there a downside, I'm wondering? Because on the surface, yes, it seems like a good SOP, right? Only if you want to do your ceramahs and all of these things, it will help if you do it online. No physical crowds, no hugging and kissing and all these kinds of things during election seasons. That would be great. It will help prevent the spread of COVID. But I'm wondering if there's a downside to not having physical gatherings, because perhaps there might not be a downside to people, with a certain affluence. They have good internet connections. They are always on social media. They have access to all this information. But people on the more rural side, usually they depend on these charamas to engage with their local leaders and so on and so forth, right?
Oh yeah, I guess you just ask the question and answer it yourself. It is actually very detrimental to parties such as UMNO or Bersatu,
right,
or PAS, those parties which primarily depend on the rural seats to win the elections, right? That's why you saw Ahmad Maslan, who right. is a party colleague of Kylie Jamaluddin, the health minister, mm-hmm. coming out blasting Kylie Jamaluddin for making such a decision, right? Because I think Kylie did this for the good of the country, but unfortunately, it is also detrimental to the political interests of his party, because you know they run in the more rural seats, and as you said, they do need to get the candidates' faces, if not the major campaigners' faces, be seen physically by the voters in order to convince those voters to vote for them. On the other hand, frankly speaking, parties like, let's say, DAP, when they are running on primarily urban and suburban seats, and I will be more blunt, I think the voters have already made up their minds anyway to vote for DAP and not any other party. So in that sense, of course, DAP would have an upper hand, in terms of voters' outreach. But they are almost guaranteed their seats already, so actually it doesn't quite make a difference to them.
And I'm wondering, what is it like on the ground? Because on the one hand, of course, we're talking about the benefits to the politicians, which party will need to campaign on physical, which party may not need that sort of added layer to their political campaigns and stuff. But when it comes to people on the ground these days, are they looking forward to campaigns? Do people want these physical campaigns to happen? Do people actually want to go and engage with their local politicians this way? Is this something that people are asking for?
Well, if you look at those videos depicting Bosco, well, who is my ex-boss, going around in Malacca, you will see that indeed there were a lot of people who would like to see him physically, right? So it's just different types of perceptions. For some people, I guess election season is like a carnival. You can get to see all these big shots and so on. Some other voters are more cautious and they prefer to get the information online. You do have this dichotomy of voters' preference when it comes to campaigning styles and methods and so on.
On the show with me today is O.A. San, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. After the break, I'll be asking him how well he thinks Parti Muda will fare in the upcoming elections. We'll be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is O.A. San, Senior Fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs, and we're talking about the upcoming Malacca state elections. All right, Isa, now let's talk about the politicking that has been going on, because UMNO and Bersatu have come out and said that at least for the Malacca state elections, they are not going to be working together. They couldn't find common ground in that sense. which means that it is inevitable that it's going to be a three cornered fight at minimum. So we're going to have UMNO on one end, we're going to have Bersatu and their Perikatan Nasional buddies on the other side, whether it's PAS, for example, who have agreed to work with Bersatu. And then, of course, on the other corner, you will have a party from the Pakatan Harapan or any of their allies. From this situation, when we look at people who are competing for the Malay heartland votes, namely UMNO and Perikatan Nasional, who stands to gain and who stands to lose from this arrangement?
Well, the short answer is UMNO would almost undoubtedly emerge as the overall victor. Mm. But I think the answer is, of course, slightly more nuanced than that, right?
Right.
Number one, I'm actually not sure that UMNO and Bersatu would go at each other, because I think Bersatu has been grandstanding over the past few weeks, talking about, you know, running in older seats and so on. But I don't think that it's really very serious, because if they were to do so, they would be lucky to keep their deposits in all of these seats, because Bersatu, it's a party almost devoid of any grassroots. They won their previous seats under the Pakatan ticket, and those voters are, of course, not likely to vote for them anymore. On the other hand, I don't think they make any inroads whatsoever in terms of, let's say, displacing UMNO in any of these constituencies. I mean, UMNO's machineries. Whereas, on the other hand, UMNO, as you would understand, has formidable machinery and resources to for the election. But I think that they were doing this sort of grandstanding in order to threaten to so-called split some votes away from UMNO. Because in a lot of constituencies, or not a lot, in a number of constituencies, the majority would be predicted to be quite small. I mean, either you'll be UMNO winning or Pakatan Harapan Party winning, but the margin could be, let's say, just a few dozen votes or a few hundreds of votes, right? Mm-hmm. And Bersatu, even though it is not performing very good, it might be able to, let's say, get 200 or 300 votes in that constituency. And thereby, it might deprive either side, primarily the UMNO side, from a hard-earned victory, right? So it is trying to use that as a threat in order to have UMNO allocate a number of seats to it, I mean, to Bersatu. So, and thereby, you know, hopefully with UMNO's blessings and help on the ground and so on, it could at least win those seats. But UMNO, it's of course, I mean, strong enough to see through that bluff. So it's like both parties are grandstanding against each other. But if you look at the example of the Sabah state election, initially UMNO and Bersatu were similarly grandstanding against each other, but in the closing days before nomination, they were able to coalesce and come to each other, to work with each other and allocate their seats and so on. And that led to their resounding victories in the Sabah state election.
What I'm also very curious about, Ehsan, is the situation between UMNO and PAS. Because, you know, post-GE14, they seem to be a very strong unit. They formed Muafakat National. For a short period, they seem to be on the same page. But now it seems like they are not exactly on the same page again. And it seems like when it comes to, you know, this upcoming Melaka elections, of course, like you mentioned, it's more nuanced, but at least on the what we are, the information that we have right now is that PAS is going to be, they are more inclined to team up with Bersatu and under the Perikatan National banner compared to teaming up with UMNO. What exactly is going on here? Why isn't UMNO and PAS coming together in this Melaka state elections?
Well, PAS is a very patient party. They look at their long-term goals, right, of theocratizing this country, making religion more prominent elements in our social and political discourse. When AMNO lost its elections, PAS saw that by teaming up with a weakened AMNO, it could perhaps better achieve those goals, you know, when both of them come would emerge victorious in future elections and so on. And when Muhyiddin became prime minister, PAS moved more towards Bersatu because they saw the Muhyiddin administration as more amenable to their version of, you know, to, moving towards a more religious society and so on. And now with AMNO coming back to power and AMNO being, shall we say, quite strident, you know, it's like the return of the victor and so on. PAS, I don't think it's very comfortable about that. So while not totally cutting off its ties with AMNO, it is similarly slightly grandstanding, saying that, hey, if AMNO, you know, does not give me what I want, then I may even come out against AMNO and so on. But again, I frankly don't think this is for real. I think they are just grandstanding such that, you know, AMNO will be more accommodating to them. But you must give it to them, the accommodation that they are seeking is not really like, oh, AMNO should give me a few seats to run and so on. It's more like AMNO should redouble its efforts to move this country and this society towards a very religious one. It's more on that front.
Now, I'm wondering, Ehsan, if all of this is a sign of things to come in the next general elections, whether, you know, after all the grandstanding and whatnot, as we approach the election date, we will actually see the proper arrangements that all these parties have. And do you think this will be, whatever the arrangements may be, will be a sort of will mirror what happens in the next general elections whenever that happens? Or do you think, you know, this situation is just incredibly fluid and it's just going to keep changing week after week after week after week as we approach the Melaka elections and the federal elections, whenever that may be?
It is admittedly very fluid, the political situation. Mm. But in order to have a say on the, I don't know how to call it, the table of political negotiations, mm. We have a seat at this table, you must have seats. I mean, you must have parliamentary seats, right? Then only you could, you know, talk about forming future coalitions and so on. So that means your own party, whichever it might be, must be a winnable party, right? I mean, if you look at our political landscapes, what are the winnable parties? Two are very prominent, AMNO and DAP. They are each guarantee at least, let's say, 40 to 50 seats, right? Mm. And then you look at, let's say, PKR, which could garner, let's say, 30 or something. A number of PKR right. Elected representatives tend to jump after they are elected and so on. So, these three are the main blocks. And of course, with the Sarawak and to a lesser extent, Sabah seats. Other than that, Bersatu, I'm not sure even Muhyiddin himself could win in the next general election. Yeah. Mm. So if you are not a winnable party, you could bluff your way only for so long, right? Then afterwards, you don't have any seats, and then, you know, people will just exclude you from any future governmental formation. Yeah. So, you must be perceived to be a party which is winnable.
Right.
If you are not, then you know, people don't see you as worth to work together with. Because you put it in AMNO's position, right? Okay, fine. I give 20 seats to Bersatu to run, right? And then Bersatu come back empty. Handed from these 20 seats, I might as well have run it myself, right?
Yeah. Political analyst Kaw Vyon Zhu, he said that the Chinese could be the kingmaker in mixed seats, where the Malay votes, according to him, will be split between Perikatan Nasional, UMNO, and of course, some of them will come to Pakatan Harapan as well. Do you agree with this, that the Chinese could be a quite an important factor or kingmaker when it comes to the upcoming Malacca state elections?
Well, the Chinese majority seats, there are only, I think, four. I think those will all go to DAP, right? Mm-hmm. There will be those Chinese significant seats whereby Chinese, it's, let's say, 30 to 40%. Those are also likely to go to DAP or PKR. And then in those seats where the Chinese make up, let's say, 10, 20%, well, you could already guess whom they will vote for, right? I mean, I could hardly imagine they will be happily voting for UMNO or even Bersatu. So still, those votes were likely to go to the Pakatan candidates. But that is assuming, of course, I mean, and thereby delivering the victory to Pakatan, that is assuming, of course, that the Pakatan party concern could pull its weight among the Malay voters. You see, let's say in this constituency, Malay voters, they are, let's say, 80%, right? Let's say UMNO or UMNO's allies, they already took, let's say, 60%. I mean, out of 80, they already took 60 of the Malay votes. Then even if all the 20% of Chinese votes pass, the 20% voting of Malays voting for Pakatan is still not enough, right? Mm. So it still depends on how, to what extent the Pakatan parties could pull their Malay votes. And I don't think they're very strong in this, frankly speaking.
Now, Ehsan, like you mentioned, your ex-boss, Najib, he is heavily involved in the Malacca elections campaign. He even... forgo his the opportunity extended to him by the court to go and visit his granddaughter and said that no, he wants to spend the time campaigning in Malacca and that he can visit his granddaughter another time. How big of an impact will Najib make in the Malacca state elections?
Well, if you look at, again, the YouTubes and so on, right, wherever he goes, he would pull a large crowd. So, I think he would make an impact, but I think even without him, the UMNO ground machinery in Malacca is sufficient to deliver almost a victory for UMNO and also to whoever working with UMNO. Yeah.
Mm. Okay, now let's switch gears a little bit and talk about Parti Muda. This will be the first elections in which they are contesting. Of course, they are not contesting under their own logo because their party hasn't been officially registered. They are negotiating with Warisan and perhaps a couple of other political leaders in Pakatan Harapan to see what sort of arrangement they can come up with, what sort of logo, which party's logo they can pinjam, and all these kinds of things. How well do you think Parti Muda will fare in their first ever elections?
I frankly think they might not win any seat, but if they could, let's say, make a significant showing, keeping the deposit, and maybe even getting 20, 30% votes in a particular constituency, I think it would be quite an achievement for them. Parti Muda, if I were them, I would run in those suburban seats, namely those seats usually contested by, let's say, PKR, right? Because the urban Chinese seats, no doubt they will all go for DAP. But if it's suburban seats, you will see a mix of, let's say, significantly Chinese with some Malays and some Indians. Maybe you can make a showing. You can keep your deposit. You can get 20, 30% votes, and that's good enough already. If they were to team up with PKR and PKR is yielding those seats to them, then it's a different story. Assuming, again, But again, you see, they have the same dilemma as Bersatu, right? Namely, if PKIU some seats to them, but they have no ground machinery and they will have to depend on PKR, then PKR, just like UMNO, would say, you know, why should I yield those seats to you, right? So yeah, they will face the same problem. And if they came up with Warisan, well, then they could run in any and all seats in the Malacca, because, you know, Warisan would give them a free hand. Now, Warisan also would not render them any ground machinery, because Warisan has zero ground machinery in Malacca, right? Mm. So they would have to weigh their options as to whether to work with PH or with Warisan. Yeah.
Why are you not yet convinced or not convinced that Patimudda will do well? I'm wondering, is it because of the lack of on-ground machinery, like you mentioned? Because it seems like at the very least, they have good social media presence and they have Syed Saddeh, who is incredibly popular. And I'm assuming he will be the, you know, I mean, not to compare, but, you know, he will bring his own, you know, people and followers and all, much like, you know, Najib on the other side. What is your thoughts on that?
You see, if it is, if you are talking about, let's say, rural constituencies, then ground machinery is very important, right? To mobilize the voters to come out to vote, even providing the logistic and transports for them to come out and so on. Now, if you are talking about urban constituencies, for Chinese, it's DAP. I mean, this is the party which has been fighting for the rights of the minorities for many, many decades, right? And this guy, what's his name? Syed Saddeh, while he's handsome, he's appealing, and so on, he is too much of a maverick. Because you don't know what is his actual intentions. Let's say for the Chinese voters, it could be you vote overwhelmingly for him and his party. Who knows, you know, he might eventually switch back to, well, not back, but switch to the other side. He is like a modern version of young Kyrie, you know, like... you like him as a minister, very effective and so on, but ultimately he's UMNO, right? Mm. So this guy, you might like him and so on, but you don't quite know his eventual political allegiance. Yeah.
But if this sort of educated guess of yours doesn't come true, let's say if the prediction is wrong, we always make predictions before elections. Some of them happen, some of them don't. If Patimudda does end up doing well, when you look at the results, what do you think that signals? Do you think that it genuinely signals a shift in political, in the way people look at politics in Malaysia? You know, something more of like the young voices, those perhaps under 30, because, you know, 18 years old still can't vote yet, but let's say those in their 24, 25 year olds, and these, they are thinking about politics differently, or they want to try new things. Do you think that could be a signal if Mudda does well?
It could, because Malacca, it's, shall we say, a suburban state. You know, it's in the outskirts of the greater Klang Valley, right? Mm. So, yeah, theoretically, if Mudda has appreciable results in Malacca, it could, in a sense, give them momentum towards the greater national election, yeah.
Mm. All right, Ihsan. A lot of analysts, they don't like answering this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Prediction time. Ultimately, when we tabulate the results, start, you know, at maybe 9 o'clock on election day at night, or 10 o'clock at night. Who do you think will emerge as the victor?
Oh, I think UMNO certainly would. It would win the most number of seats, and it depends on the whether it could garner an outright majority. It might even do so, in which case it can form government just by itself, or if it doesn't, you'll be close to a majority, and it would depend on which particular party would like to enter into coalition with UMNO. And I'm not even discounting the other side, namely the Pakatan side, because I think in recent months, Pakatan has been quite tempted, just like in all those star movies, you know, the dark side sometimes could have tremendous power of attractions.
Just one last thing before we wrap up. Just a counter to what you just brought up. Some have said in the past that because we, you know, the Undi 18, while it's now, it's already sort of, the ball has already started rolling, those 18-year-olds won't be able to vote in this Malacca elections. Some have said that with all of that in mind, what they think is that ultimately the elections will be the exact same results as GE14. Do you think so? Because GE14, Malacca has 28 seats, Pakatan Harapan won 15, and Barisan Nasional, under their various parties, they won 13 seats. But do you, how much weight do you think this argument holds that it will be at the exact same result as GE14?
I frankly think you'll be around that 15, 13. I'm just not sure which side is 15 and which side is 13. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. On that note, Ehsan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much indeed.
That was O. Ehsan. He's a senior fellow at the Singapore Institute of International Affairs. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.